do you think that all of this now also is going faster and faster? It's getting, in a sense, then warmer and warmer and and more severe. Maybe also as a kind of consequence of you know, that because of that we are not looking at the inner world or the self.
Yes,
or,
it is. And of course, I make a personal study of that a lot. I'm very troubled by what I see. I think a lot of the fauna death, these beachings of whales, these beachings of porpoises. You see the suddenly a huge you know, schools of fish go missing, death in the fauna. We had that tribulation about the bees. It turned out to be a bit of a hoax, but you know, everyone knows that there's problems with the frogs, and you know, there is a problem. Well, it's very easy to understand once you understand that there's an earth grid, and the earth grid is absolutely an extension of human consciousness. People think that's a preposterous thing to say. Then tell me how the internet works. There's no wires, right? There's digital space out there, and there's your stuff in front of your computer. Well, I'm talking the same thing. Just a higher frequency than what you see as digital today is this psychotronic energy, you know, that comes from the unconscious mind that connects to the Earth, Mother Earth, Gaia. This is absolutely understood now. Bruce Lipton has talked about just how much of your unconscious mind operates. You know, so that other brain, that ancestral brain, the racial memory, the unconscious, you know, is working. And it is directly in dialogue with the earth grid. And our toxicity, by not being dealt with on the upper end here, is back, just like a sewer, is therefore backing up. And the earth grid then has to then go into a function in which it's cleansing human toxicity. It's not really meant to do that. But as we know, all earth circuitry systems are compensatory. So the earth grid then turns itself over to hygiene. But even it is now backing up. Because the human being refuses to deal with his own toxicity. Remember the Native American Indians, the shaman, everyone from Bruce Lee onwards have been telling you, deal with your own issues. Deal with your own problem. You know, you are your own temple. How can you take the beam, how can you take the, what is it, the Bible says, how can you fix the sight of another when there's a big beam in your own eye? Own sight is impaired, you see. All the greatest mystics have been telling you, deal with your own house first. If you trouble with your own house, you'll inherit the wind, right? Well, we are inheriting the wind now. But the thing is that this physical, this psychic toxicity, it's like a thing. I actually, in my eyes, see it as actual sewage. I think of it in very physical ways. And I think people should need to do that. This is backing up into the lifeblood, the life, the capillaries, the veins, and the arteries of the earth. It is damp, and the lymphocytes of the earth, which is the earth grid, cannot deal with it. And therefore, that is backing up into the animals. Animal consciousness is now affected, disaffected, you see. And highly sensitized, highly much more evolved animal species. Hopefully when we're talking about magic, we can get into this thing about the inanimate, so-called. They are now processing our toxicity. And this is why also the Egyptian gods had animal heads. It's also one of the reasons why the animals in India were sacred, like Shiva, who wore the horns and stuff like that, and sat upon the tiger, you know. There's a Durga, Kali being the black goddess, but the serpents were around her, and the animal kingdom is very much involved in all ancient iconography. There's a reason for that. It's because these are the antenna of the earth.
So, I mean, we talked a little bit about the New Age movements and Al Gore and the global warming cult, or, you know, what we should call it. You know, one thing I did want to kind of sneak in here also is, how about the so-called, you know, truth movement, or even the conspiracy movement? Do you think that that also could be kind of a, like a niche or a temporary escape for some people, or, you know, a new cult to join for a while? Or
yeah, it's a fashion. It can easily be that. There's the heart of it, the true part of it, the research community, people who are dedicated to spiritual growth, dedicated to learning, dedicated to knowledge, philosophy. See, before philosophers were called philosophers, you know, they were called sages. Sage. Philosopher was only a very recent word that came in Greece. Before that, the man who looked at the knowledge, in fact, the first person to ever use the term philosopher was Pythagoras, actually. Before that, they were called sages. And the sage is the Sophia. He's questing after the knowledge. And you will have that within that movement. And then, of course, you'll have all the, you know, the people who join the bandwagon thinking it's cool. And you get a lot of that. So, you know, I try to distinguish in my work between the people who are just on the fashion part of it and those who are really authentically involved. But you're going to find that in every era, you know. It's not that the subject itself is bad.
No, no, definitely not. You might have stumbled upon the truth.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, so sorcery is twofold. not only to perpetuate the inauthentic life, but also to act adversarially to the authentic man or life. It's an adversarial energy as a counteractive force to those who try to awaken to an authentic life.
Right. This is extremely important for people to realize that sorcery is not just one form of action. It's not just the creation and the sustainment and the perpetuation of some what we call the inauthentic life. It has also got a dual aspect, because there are authentic people in the world. There are virtuous people in the world who, either from birth or from later, you know, snapping out of it, so to speak, are trying to pursue the real. Well, it's not going to be a bed of roses. It's not a scenic route by any means. Quite the reverse. So anyone who's really been a truth seeker, or a person who's, you know, what I would call a dharmic man or the authentic man, is going to know all about that other kind of sorcery. Because it's the sorcery that is adversarial in nature, and it brings you the confusion, the loss, the alienation, the obstacles, the mental doubt. All that, it's mostly internal stuff. So let it be known, you know, that the road is quite, you know, barren, lonely in a way, because the person who starts to seek for the truth will encounter this other action.
Yeah,
that is known to people. You know, the great trials of Hercules, Odin, and the story of Odin, of course, is hugely important with this. Siddhartha Road, you know, the Road of Thorns. However, you see, there is no... To me, there's no exception, you know. And this is something you can't instill in somebody. It's just, you know, to me, there's no alternative. One has to discover what the forms of oppression are, and one has to go through the, you know, the suffering, or whatever you want to call it, of the authentic life.
The dark night of the soul.
The so-called dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
I believe that people are going to go through it anyway. It's just a perception thing. It's just a what perspective you're at. I look at the people in a life of regimentation and conformity, those who are taking what's called a karmic role, as being in a greater form of pain, actually, in a way, because their soul is screaming. And they are harming themselves. Like Socrates said, to harm another is to harm oneself. Well, to harm oneself is to harm another. You know, those people are harming themselves. They're not living the life that they've come here to live. You know, and the search for that is not sorcery, it's magic. But you're absolutely right. Sorcery is also this adversarial shield or cloaking that prevents you from understanding the magic of life. It's there to distort you. It's there to distract you. Remember in the beginning of Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, when all they're sitting around the walnut table after they've discovered all the things that, you know, life is all about, and the big secret, and they talk about, well, the problem why people are not enlightened is because they get distracted, and then he gets distracted right away, right, like looking out the window. Well, that's the moment of sorcery, you know.
Yeah.
And they will, literally in that movie, a building, right, a skyscraper is toppling to hit their skyscraper. That's beautifully done, because like, literally the sorcery will magnify itself to any magnitude to get you to be distracted. From the most smallest thing, you see, to the biggest event, constitutes a form of distraction. And so my message is that then the study of those forms of distraction becomes very important. Not looking for what enlightenment is. No, no, no. That's become totally meaningless now. Now what is important is your discovery of all the elements of distraction. That's the truly creative, you see, mind that starts to discover, okay, there's adversarial action. How does it work?
And the things that you're traumatized by or feel like a phobia or something, they will grow and become, you know, larger and larger as you know, because
Don't understand that they're operating on you from outside. If you think they're auto-generated, then of course you're caught in them forever, thinking it's my problem, my this, my that. When you realize that these things are, you know, built into the universe, that they're there to impede you, then you change your perspective and you start looking at them more as a detective. And they lose power over you. But that's another huge, sort of investigation as to this. I just want to mention for now that there are these two forms of sorcery. There's many forms of sorcery, but the two main ones is that the manufacture of the inauthentic life, now that you've chosen that, and the resistance factor to those who are trying to escape from the inauthentic life. All those things that might hold you back from progress. And I see it a lot. I see people complaining all the time, I can't do it, it's too much, I suffer too much. You know, there's too much alienation, I feel there's too much loss in my life. Where's this going? And people are very interested in, look, this is worth it.
Yeah. You know. Can I gain something from it? Or, you know.
So I say, well, why are you concerned about that now? You know, there's sorcery happening now, see? You know, if you're doing it for its truth, you don't question, is it going to work out tomorrow? The question is, are you doing it for the real motive right now? Does it feel good now? Is this something you really want to do? And if it's not, have the courage to go back to the other way. Nobody's judging you, you know. Mm. If you can't manage it, that's fine, then you give up.
Mm. So, do you want to talk a little bit about magic, you know? Dive into that now. About true magic and what it might be and in opposite to, yeah, to sorcery and how people can, you know, discover the magic in their own lives and so forth.
Yeah, well, see, basically sorcery, it's not really that easy to define magic. You know, that's why we have to mostly define what sorcery is. What is anti-magic?
Mm.
Because, and again, remember, we're up against a huge wall of what people think magic is, which is mostly phony rubbish put there by the media and see storybooks. Again, the wand waving, enhancing your ego, you know, and all of that. That's not what it is at all. But sorcery, let's just recap it, is anything that interferes or distorts the true and natural action of anything.
Mm.
We're talking about human progress here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that which gets in the way or disaffects anything natural.
Mm.
So you have something that's happening naturally, which is man's growth, his evolution, his development, his free thinking, his discovery of himself and the world. Well, we'd be talking about all the things that get in the way of that. That's sorcery. Sorcery is that which interferes or distorts the true and natural organic action of anything, right, from outside.
Mm.
Something that perverts natural function. And we are living in a world of that. But we have perceived that, you know, magic is often the working of one mind or a mind over other minds.
Mm.
No, that's not magic, that's sorcery.
Mm.
When one mind is trying to, you know, operate over another mind, because people say mind over matter, like you read in the beginning,
mm-hmm,
or mind over mind. Well, that's what these sorcerers are doing. They are trying to operate mentally over you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give them the right to do that, then you will be the, disciple or apostle of sorcery, as they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, as we said, the creation, it's the maintenance of what we see all around us.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, that this true black art, what people have got to understand, is that this black art is operating to block out true creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Magic is the discovery of yourself and what true creativity is. Because where there's creativity, there's selfhood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But where there's technology, not so. In one of the DVDs, I think it was Divination and the Goddess, I talk about what technology is and why it came about. Technology is nothing more than, or science is nothing more than rivalry of the female, the female of power to give birth.
Mm.
It was seen as so magical and so on that man wanted to simulate that.
Mm.
And so technology was kind of born.
Would you categorize that as something unnatural then?
Yeah. Yeah, in a way. Because the motive of it was to rival.
Mm.
You know, I don't think that technology is a true expression of the masculine principle. I think it's a distortion of the masculine principle,
mm-hmm,
because it was born out of rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what man's real purpose is on Earth, if he's not meant to be involved in science and technology, is a really big question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I tend to then become, you know, I'm very intrigued by what Heidegger, the philosopher, was saying as what man's true role is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit hard to explain, though. He was talking about something very different than just, you know, this commitment of man towards this Dr. Strangelovian sort of technology of making his children his mechanical children, and dehumanizing the world, you see, and conquering nature and conquering the feminine. Right? He was talking about more, he expressed it by poetic terms in which he called man as the shepherd of being, that man's true role was to shepherd being.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, that's like a 2-hour show right there. You know, start explaining the ins and outs of all of that.
Mm.
But in the same DVD, I do remember now that What our problem is not only that the ego is fragile, not only that it's terribly fragmented and therefore susceptible to control, but that the Eastern people in Indian philosophy, they talk about maya, meaning the illusion.
Yeah.
Right? But in the DVD, Divination of the Goddess, I refute the meanings that have been given to that word, just like I refute the traditional definitions of dharma and karma. So I also refute the traditional Indian interpretation of maya, and explain in the DVD that maya is not that there is that the world or matter is illusionary, sucking your spirit down, holding you from truth, you know, but that the real maya, the true meaning of the word, was your ideas about the world and your ideas about matter is maya.
Mm.
So it's not that the world is evil or, you know, lower, or matter is lower or false or spirit denying, you see, but man's inauthentic ideas about something, particularly about the world, particularly about matter, his deviant, perverse, irrational, you see, understandings of the world around him is Maya. So it's again in his brain. So, and the sorcerers use this, you know, the Indians also call that state avidya.
Avidya.
Because avidya means knowledge, like the Vedas. Avidya, or aveda, means no knowledge, ignorance.
Okay. Yeah.
So ignorance, according to the true interpretation of in Eastern mysticism, is that avidya, or karma, is created from a false understanding of the world around you, or of yourself. I've talked about it in other programs with you, about the idea we have of reality as opposed to what reality is itself. That's avidya. So if there is any action of magic at all, if magic has a physical application, then it is to remove that avidya and to get rid of those false understandings about the world. William Blake referred to it as mind-forged manacles. We've got manacles on the mind. Or, you know, like you said, our perception is not infinite.
So we could say, to tie this back to the sorcery in the media, for instance, because that, in a sense, is about creating this false image of the world and just focusing on, you know, all the problems that we see out there. And this, you know, a lot of people, you know, they get their version of reality through the TV. So they look upon that and say, oh my God, the world is, you know, collapsing. It's falling apart. Everything is, you know, bad. It's gone.
You're being
gone
traumatized.
Yeah.
And you're being offered a new, inauthentic model of reality. This is where the media is, you know, two aspects of the media. We talked about two aspects of sorcery, but the media has two-pronged attack as well. One is to traumatize you so that your own inner republic is in complete ruins. They love that. Look around at the teenagers today. Do you see anything that's not in ruins? And the second prong attack is, now we're going to manufacture for you the model of reality that we want you to have. Okay? Right? So now they've got this shit that you see on, you know, television every day, every morning. So they've traumatized and eviscerated your own natural imaginative quality, your scent of yourself, your awareness of yourself, and they're going to replace it with this hologram, this phantasmagoria that they cough up, they spew up, and everybody's into it.
5 minutes later, the commercial's on, you know, this is the new car, the new entertainment,
the new look,
movie,
or whatever,
you know.
The new hero, you know, the new hero of the pop charts, as you know, Paul Simon has declared it. So this is their pronged attacks, and that's a form of sorcery. And remember, they don't mind offering you what looks like a very hygienic reality. Remember, you'll see yoga poses. You know, I've gone into this in my DVD on the subversive use of symbolism. They'll sure sell you subliminally. How many advertisements do you see with halos of light and crucifixes and crosses and androgyny, right? And sacred animals, and you'll see all sorts of Christian imagery in the you know, the commercials, and people sitting in yoga poses with these sublime looks on their faces, you know. We'll remove you from your depression. We're going to create a world of smiling depressives. This is going to be a dictatorship without tears. We got a perfect world for you. Here's pills. Here's everything is at your fingertips that you could want. And there we are with James, you know, our James Bond perfect, you know, little roulette wheel reality. It's all conjured up by those, you know, witch doctors, the sorcerers. And people are into it. That's it. They're not. They become cynical, not critical. I want people to be as critical as hell. I want them to be totally judgmental. I want them to use that reason. I want, you know, like Anthony Robbins says, pump it. I'll advocate that. Pump it till it hurts. Yeah, your reason, your critical ability, your judgment. But what's happening is that the media is turning that off. It's turning it down. Oh, don't criticize. Yeah. Don't. Oh no. That's too much trouble. So all these abilities, you see, are being weeded out. They're being slowly suppressed by schools and by the media. And these are mind-forged manacles around people's minds to make them narrower and narrower. And there's nothing on this earth more narrow-minded than the average teenager. And yet they're running around thinking they're the most open-minded people because they can wear, you know, green army jackets and, you know, camouflage pants and ride a skateboard, you know, and be into all sorts of kinds of music. There's nothing more narrow-minded on the face of the earth than the average teenager. You don't see 40, 50-year-olds going spray canning, you know, beautiful neighborhoods and leaving their garbage around everywhere, you know. So this is, again, another one of the illusions that we have. You know, you can't get through to most people. Because they're into what the media has provided. They're already overstimulated with all that rubbish and the nonsense and the fake forms of authenticity sold to them as reality. Look at the punk movement. You know, these leaders of the punk movement are all sitting in Beverly Hills in big mansions. Billy Idol and, you know, Johnny Rotten, you know, all living it up. Multi-millionaires, right, living up the world. And then 5 minutes before that, they're like, you know, wearing the communist, you know, their anarchist T-shirts and all of this stuff. We're against. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
If people haven't woken up, right, you know.
Gelled up from bone.
Oh, my God. Total examples of that, yeah. Sickening. Getting down on their knees in front of the royals.
Yep.
Don't even start talking to me about that.
You know, and we also have the aspect of people trying to figure out modern culture. We have a lot of people that want to. The modern culture in itself is a mystery, and what's in, what's hot, what's not, you know. And you want to try to stay azure with that. You want to try to figure it out. What should you wear? What, you know, all these problems within the fashion or you know, the conventional society itself.
There's so many cliques, so many splinter groups, so many chic, you know, little subcultural cliques, that now you're completely overwhelmed. And again, this is remember we talked about in previous shows how the ego loves to troubleshoot the problems it makes, and which you can be caught forever, as most people are caught forever. You know, they don't look at why has my mind manufactured a problem. No. They're disciples of fixing the problem instantly. This is where the psychology doesn't exist. Like the global warming, we have a problem. No, you've manifested a problem. The psychologist now looks at why you have manifested this problem. What's going on that you have developed for yourself? I mean, completely out of the thin blue, you know, the clear blue sky, you have manufactured a problem. So see, the sage or the mystic doesn't see a problem. He doesn't acknowledge that. He doesn't get into that at all.
It's a totally different mindset because, I mean, in a way, if you should try to explain that to someone who looks at the raw data, so to speak, you know. But, you know, it's right here on the paper. Greenhouse gases bump up. Here we go. That's the problem.
And
right
I'm ready
there,
to
you know?
Go. I got my toolkit. I'm suited up. We've put money into this. The car is revved up. What the hell are you stopping me at the door saying, can we study your psychology? You know? No, I'm ready to go. We're going to climb that mountain. We're going to do it. We're going to fix it.
Yeah.
That's re-hardwiring. That's, you know, and this is what is going on. And the politician, you see, is the smartest asshole who's been able to climb amongst everybody else. He's above the psychologist. He's above the philosopher. He has sort of plowed through the crowd to say, it's me. I am the one who will fix all your world problems. So it's not a philosopher up there talking about global warming. It's not a psychologist. And guess what? It's not a weather expert. It's not a meteorologist. It's a bloody politician. And they're all happy with this. No. This is a meteorological problem. Can I please see a meteorologist talking about it? Even if I'm going to buy into it, I might want to see a meteorologist talking about the problem or somebody who's, you know, lived his whole life in that fold.
Studying that.
What's Al Gore doing up there championing in it? Because this is what the sorcery is all about. It's about big daddy, you know? It's not about the facts. And if you listen, of course, to Stan Monteith and the other people who've got the rebuttals to all of this, you'll find out the true story of how this whole global warming nonsense has been used to completely collectivize, you see, and manipulate human people. So this is the act of sorcery. We're not interested in the facts, and we tool up. We're just dying to kit up and mount up and go in search of all of these causes, these Don Quixote windmills, you know, to feel a sense of empowerment, because we are eviscerated of any inner power. We're also outer directed. What I mean specifically by that, and this ties into what magic is that the person who's involved in the magic, as opposed to the sorcery, is a person who is inner directed, meaning that he's not waiting for life to turn him on. Life has its stimuli, and that's fine. I'm not talking about living in an Orwellian, bleak, empty world where nobody does anything, no. But I'm just saying that in the magical person, the dharmic person, is not waiting for life to turn him on. His meaning of life is given from himself. In other words, most people in the world that you meet are waiting for life to give them meaning. And I really mean it in exactly that way. If you could portray somebody sitting like a couch potato in a big armchair, you know, turn me on. I demand, you know, that the TV and the girlfriend and the world and the neighbor and the world system and the game and the ball game and, you know, turn me on. I want that because I have no inner life.
Entertainment again. Going to the movies and, you know, the roller coaster ride. Anything.
Bringing nothing from within. Now, the dharmic person is somebody who doesn't even he hasn't even thought about that. He is so motivated.
Mm.
He realizes that life has no meaning.
Mm.
It only has the meaning you give it.
Mm.
Man is a meaning machine. He's meant to bring meaning from within himself and bring it out onto the world. Otherwise, life will have no meaning. Mm. Or if you don't want to do that, then don't cry in my ears about the life you're living.
Mm.
If you do not want to bring meaning from within yourself, then happily take the prepackaged, predigested, literally packaged, formulaic stuff that is provided for you. Here is your TV dinner.
Mm.
Here, sir, is your meal.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Just slide the card, and here it is.
Mm.
We give you your meaning.
Mm.
And millions upon millions of people are happy to do that because they refuse point blank to bring meaning from within themselves. Mm.
Humans are cheaper than machines. The perfect robot, again. The system, work for keeping all of this in place. And at the meantime, on the other hand, you have an agenda. They can get from the human race, what they want, the perfect worker bees, and we get we get to be plugged into the matrix and
That's
be
right.
entertained by it.
Yes, because the beauty of the system, that inauthentic system, is that the government does listen. Big Daddy is absolutely all ears to hear you screaming, I don't want to create meaning for my life. You do it.
Mm.
They go, thank you. Thank you. The vampire says, come over my door, but enter in of your own free will.
Mm.
You must give your power to them. Then they run. Then they're busy, like bees, creating the meaning for you. And you cannot now go back. There's no retraction at that point. You've given them the rights. To do this, you've turned off your mind, you've turned off your creation. Now the magical way is to strip you from those roles, to make you question those roles, to give you the confidence to leave those roles. Magic is about educating you into the fact that the sorcery exists, so that you can defeat it. It's to make you polyphrenic as opposed to monophrenic, single functioned, hyper focused, polyphrenic, creative as opposed to inventive, mutable. Like we said, the moksha, the true transcendence of good and evil, right, is not trying to fix good and evil in the world, but fixing your attitudes towards those things.
Mm.
You are in control of your attitudes towards good and evil. Mm. Instead of having a single-directed intelligence, have what is known as omnidirectional intelligence. Different kind of attitude. Reintroducing yourself to what's called the inanimate is a very big part of this.
Mm.
That there's a whole world of living things around you, but you don't see it because you've been taught to believe that animals and trees and even stones and rocks and mountains are dead. You may not admit that, but you've basically been trained to believe that. That the only thing that deserves your attention is the human being.
Yeah, you mentioned this before, about the relationship to nature itself, or a tree, or a mountain, or a rock, or whatever.
It's purely functional. It's purely secondary. It doesn't even rate anymore. And that's the reason, is because human beings give us back all the cues and affectations that little ego needs. And so the 100% of a person's attention goes into human interactions, and hence pain is at the end of that. That's not endorsed by, the higher force. It's not acceptable for you to merely be relating reciprocally one ego to the other. Because remember, the ego only knows that it exists by relativity to other egos, by the way. Okay, the ego knows it exists in company of other egos. Right? Schopenhauer says, the world is my idea. So, by connectivity, by nextness, the ego's existence is based on its relativity to other egos. And therefore, that's why it's so human-directed. But there's a whole world, an animal kingdom, a natural kingdom, light. Do people have a relationship with light? If they ever think about it, the air that moves, the breath, the prana, the constant changing of the sky, the water, are the elements your best friends? You see, the elements are my best friends. You say that, you're like, they're ready to lock you up. But do you have a personal relationship with the ocean, or with trees? Salvador Dali would never come to a friend's house without running over and hugging the cedar trees there.
Really?
Put his arms around these cypress trees and just stand there, hugging these trees. That's an authentic man. He's not a crank. Have you ever seen anybody like Van Gogh paint, the cypress tree? He had a personal relationship with those trees. He had a personal relationship with the night sky. That's why he's Van Gogh. Right? Rembrandt, Vermeer. My God. Look at the relationship that Vermeer, the artist, had with light. Light is human to him. Right? Light is a thing. It's a teacher. It's a mentor. It's a god. Did you know that in the pagan times, in the Celtic times, trees were gods? Please understand this. Trees were gods. The sacred grove was considered so sacred that a tree was considered an oracle, literally an angelic form. Yeah. And some trees more than others, of course. But the miracle of all of this stuff that's happening around is just considered the inanimate. So people go, what is magic, Michael? You know, magic is that thing that is already happening as soon as you open your eyes in the morning. It's not something you attain or you find or you join some secret society in order to be, you know, attaining at the end of some sort of initiation ceremony. It's the initiation of opening your eyes in the morning. As soon as you open your eyes in the morning, before the whole ego, you know, machinery begins, right, of all this other stuff, the actual act of being in the world is magic. Sorcery is what tries to hide you from that. Now, Heidegger brought this out because he pointed out that the word Duncan in German, which means thank you, and the word Duncan. For thinking, Denken, right, is the same word.
That's right.
They're very similar. They're from the same root. So in other words, he's saying that thinking should be an act of gratitude. Is an act of gratitude. Not should be. The man's thought is a process, a mantra of thank you to the universe. Thank you for existence. He even speaks very clearly about the opening of the physical eye in the morning. And when the light hits the pupil of the eye, he calls that a spiritual experience. That the fact that you've awoken to the miracle of the day. You know, we say good morning, or I think in Swedish is god morgon.
Right?
So god morgon. You're not saying that to some punter in the street. That was never a statement originally. It was meant for, you know, some other goon. God morgon was good morning to the morning. To, in other words, to this thing that is now considered inanimate. You walk around in a thing called a day. You are embraced by a thing, you know, called the day. Henry Bergson talked about that time embraces you like a brother. He called it the elan vital. With the word, look how beautiful, the word vital means vital, life. He called time that. That time is a thing, is an entity that you can talk to, that you can relate with. But you ignore it all of your life.
Something you fight instead.
Right, well, of course, now it's adversity. This is the sorcery has come in. You have no dialogue with that. So this is where the fragmentation, aloneness, alienation is, because you are self-alienated, because you put your entire psychic focus into other equally depressed, equally lost, equally fragmented, equally existentially, you see, lost individuals. So it's a chorus of the same kinds of people, and you've lost your earth, you've lost your roots. You know, the old, there's an old alchemical statement, you know, which says, come to the center of the earth, and there you shall find the philosopher's stone. Come to the center of the earth. And again, they're pulling you to the earth. They're saying, it's here, the altar of the earth, this immediacy of your life. Thought and thinking are the same word. You know, it begins with, another way to express it is to say that, look, it's not experience. You shouldn't be demanding that experience is always fresh and new. It's the mind of the experiencer that needs to be fresh and new. What we have are these people with a dead mind going, turn me on! More stuff! More stimuli! That was good, but now we want better! More, more, more! I'm dead! Animate me! Like a dead horse is being injected with adrenaline every 5 seconds. Then we wonder why the world's in the state that it's in. The mind is what needs to be continually incarnating, refreshed. Not experience. This is what the world has to understand. Or another way to look at it is how we did in the future of mankind, looking at the meaning of the etymology of the word enlightenment. Can we stop thinking of in terms of luminescence, which is this very masculine, see, solaristic, atomistic way of looking at things, and re-look at it like lightness, like the feather, the balloon, the fool card. You know, lightness, not accumulating, attaining, acquiring, having, but letting go.
Lightness of the mind, taking things on a lighter note, in a way.
Yin, what they call yin. One of the secondary meanings of the word yin. Letting go, divestiture, allowing, non-attaching, you see. Emptying out so you can always be full.
Non-controlling also, in a way.
Yes, very much. You know, you're not in control anyway. That's just another one of these illusions. Another way to look at it is instead of trying to embrace, allow yourself to be embraced. So there's two, you know, one's an acquisitive. I want the truth. I want Jesus. I want God. I want it. I have a habit. But we're not hearing ourselves. We're not hearing ourselves. We're not listening to the nonsense of that. You think that your encompassment is ever going to, you know, put the real in your pocket? Can you put the mountain in your pocket? Can you harness the power of the tiger or the lamb or the stag? You can't own that, you see. You can't own the polar bears. You can't own the oceans of the world. But you can dive into it. You can let it embrace you. So man needs to change. This is what this Nuthan Hadith of Crowley was. This is what this prolific and devouring. Blake is saying you can devour or you can be prolific. Right? There's two ways. Man has a choice. I like to always put it that I always describe it in my work as throwing away the oars.
Yeah.
And it's a concept people don't like. I have a lot of resistance against this. But I've always put it that there's the river. And on this great river, and I mean the river of time, this is the Elan Vital, it's not, but you can pictorialize it as a physical river. I'm looking at is this the river that carries the cosmos along? This is the great river that they said the Maya spoke of, you know, that is the river of creation, that pulls all the planets, all the stars, all the systems along with it. It's the river of time, the river of reality. That's a silent river that we don't hear anymore because of our own clutter. Now on that river is our life. We're born, you see, not into the world. Because when you say somebody's born into the world, you're implying that they're separate from it. You're born from the womb of the world. You're born from the womb of the universe. You're absolutely part of the universe.
And you're made from all the, even all the atoms itself. You know, you borrow them on the short time you were here, and then you return them, you know, to the source.
And your dementia thinks of that universe, that womb, as a hierarchy when it's really a holarchy. But you're born into this movement, and you deafen yourself to the movement because on the river is the boat. And the boat is consciousness. And the boat is, as we said, a creation out of the womb of the world. But on the boat is oars. And the oars is the ego. And the oars is the ego of you thinking you are directing your life. That's sorcery. The magic is to let go of the oars and to let the boat go on the river wherever the river wants to take it. And that's a completely different action. One is Taoist, the other is this other monstrous dimension, dementia we've got. Oh, no, I can't trust the river. Give me the oars, quick. Row. And then you row yourself into a crevasse. You row yourself into a whirlpool. You see, you're banging up against other people's boats, you know, losing direction. And some idiots even want to go out against the tide. You know, the superego man, right? Which you can name a few of those. But, you know, so the gods look down and they laugh. They put the oars there to see where we're at. The Donald Duck moron who's like, you know, in the boat there, paddling away, is the one who's absolutely caught in his own ego, thinking, if I don't paddle, I'm not getting nowhere. It's all about effort. It's all about me. Here's my picture of Anthony Robbins, and I've learned how to do it. Give me the oars. Get out of my way. And although the universe rains down horrors of pain and suffering onto that kind of person's life, they'll never learn. They just don't learn. Because they get to like the sound of their oars and the adrenaline of feeling they're directing their own life. But the real art of life, which is the magic of life, which is the enlightenment, is to let go of the oars. And then slowly acculturate yourself to the sound of the river. Because that river, by the way, for all your paddling and for all your rowing and for all your histrionics, is taking you precisely where it wants you to go. So you can spend your whole life rowing and it isn't going to matter at all because the river is still master. In fact, I would believe that all you're rowing is just, basically sending you up shit creek. It's not only a futile waste of time that you'd almost want to cry, you'd almost want to laugh if it wasn't so sad, which most people are doing. It really is a predicament. But in the end, it's not even you taking you to where you need to go anyway, because the river is ultimately going to decide. But you could exhaust, the only time that most people are now, this is what I have a problem, you see, with a lot of the New Age movement and where we're heading in the world now, is that certain people are now waking up to the sound of the river, not because out of choice, but because they've literally exhausted their energy.
Burned out.
They burned out.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I'm kind of glad that you're hearing the sound of the river because you're burned out, but it's still not the most optimum way. It would have been so much better had you had the guts and the power and the faith in the river to throw away the oars in the beginning. But no. Man of the inauthentic life, the man of the metropolis, doesn't want to hear anything about that.
Yeah.
He's not interested in hearing about it. He's going, what are you talking about? We know what you're all about. You know, I'm not meant to go like that. I'm meant to command, you know, have my life. My life is me. This false, remember I told you the false selling, they're selling us the false idea of individualism, just as they sell us a false understanding of freedom. Well, don't you understand when America's screaming and yelling about, we're the country of the individual. Individualism is what it's all about. That's the false. That's the circus concoction, the papier-mâché version of the real freedom, the real individuality. There's nothing, even a shred of it. You know, they didn't. Ayn Rand was the only one that I can think of who talked in true terms in America of what that individualism is. So a better relationship with the inanimate and the dropping of that word completely. You know, back to a pantheistic pantheism where everything is living. Bringing meaning from within yourself. Throwing away the oars. And throwing away the oars, by the way, has been known for centuries. In India, they call it void magic. The Druids and the ancient Shama knew that there's positive and negative magic, and then there's another kind of magic that they refer to as void magic. Void magic, in which you touch on the void to give you the power that you require. But that requires letting go. Any kind of action of will, you see, and thinking of that you're in control of the universe is opposite. You work with the universe, but first you have to be tutored by that universe. Just like anyone goes to school, you have to first learn the ropes, don't you? So man wants to already be, especially the politician is the extreme example of this delirium or this dementia, is that long before he's even tutored as how the universe or nature works, he's already going to run the class. He's already going to, you know, it's like a guy jumping into a Formula One racing car and trying to do the, you know, Indianapolis or whatever it is, you know. He's going to end up in the, you know, where he's going to end up? He's going to end up in a ball of fire.
That's right.
You know, and taking so many other people with him.
Yeah.
You can't get on a stallion, thoroughbred, you know, stallion, and start riding without knowing how to work it. So man is already taking the reins of the universe without instruction. He's killed the instructors. They're all massacred, martyred, and nailed, and dead, and murdered. And now he's taking the reins himself, and then wondering why he's in a ditch. I'm completely happy that he's in a ditch. I want people to end up in the ditch. Because you will not break certain cardinal rules of the universe. I want you to be in angst, because I know why that angst is being brought on. And I'm not in any way threatened by it, those darker emotions. You refuse to keep them, you know, listen to this, all these voices. So of course they become dark. Once upon a time when they were speaking, you didn't listen. So they become, you see, repressed. Those voices are repressed, and then they take on a different likeness. So this new understanding, you know, compassion. Let's think of the word compassion etymologically as complete passion. Complete passion about your life, bringing it from within yourself. Another way of looking at it is, again, been explained in The Future of Mankind. Try, in every problem that you come across in your life, voice it differently. You know, what's the languaging? Are you saying, I've been sold a lie? Or are you saying, I bought a lie? You know, I'm going to recap that. It's very important to restate this because, again, we need to snap out of the psychology of thinking, oh, somebody is doing bad by me.
Externally.
Externally. What am I permitting to take place? And finally, you know, it comes from Plato, but Plato was, Socrates were always asked by the people there in the symposium, tell us about, you know, the spirit. What happens in the spirit world? You know, tell us what it's like to be transcendent being, and, you know, what lies after death. And he would never address that. And he would say, look, my only concern is to get you to the human level. What are you worrying about what the gods are doing? You're at the subhuman level, you know, and my job is merely to get you to the human level. You don't even know what it is to be human yet. Because you think you're already at human level, I'm telling you what to do, you know, on the divine level. That's way, way, way far away. You shouldn't be concerned with that. And it's really true that today the job of any philosopher is to continue to do that process, is to get people to understand what it means to be truly human. Discover your own capacities. You know, all possibilities are only open to the man who's open to all possibilities,
That's right.
who allows himself to be that way. The person who has set no limits for himself, he's unlimited. He cannot ever come to the limit of who he is. And therefore, you will find yourself in a form of opposition against all those people who have chosen the other way. You will find yourself as being an outsider. And but again, lose that sense of alienation by turning yourself on to those inanimate friends that are just waiting for you there, hungering for your presence, hungering for your dialogue. The universe is your teacher. Nature is your teacher. Learn from nature. Nature is what they call, there's a philosophy called, or it's a science, I guess, called negentropia. Ever heard of that? Negentropia. N-E-G-E-N. Negentropia, or negentropic. And that's what the universe is. See, the universe's order is not plugged in. You don't find a socket where the universe is plugged in so that the sun and the moon and the clouds and the rain, you know. Where's its energy bank? It's what's called negentropic. It's self-developing, self-perpetuating, and self-regulating. So we need to be, you know, studying that every morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bruce Lee said, every morning, like a scholar at his first class, I prepare a blank mind for the day to write upon.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
That summarizes everything that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Find the void. Find the still point.
Mm-hmm.
And from that place, draw your energy. And resist any force, or have zero tolerance for any force that stops you from doing that. Because as we said, there is an adversarial energy. Because I believe what I'm talking about is man's true destiny. He would be doing this if he wasn't already, you know, in a form of dementia. But that dementia, that infection, that epidemic is caused by external forces that I address in my work and that people need to know about.
Everything that draws away your attention or from you being focused on what you want to do for, you know,
is your
during
study,
your day. Or
is your homework.
Yeah.
And I want to see people with their heads down and taking real notes on that one. That, you know, people want to, I want to see total and utter, you know, awareness of all these factors. And some of them are political and some of them are environmental. And, you know, there's all sorts. There's all people that can come to the table at this. I don't rule out anything.
Yeah.
Yes, there are many forms. There's psychotropica. There's pharmacopoeia. There's mind control through the television. There's, you know, mercury. You know, we're talking about a lot of different, you know, we know, hopefully, listeners are aware of this is manifold. Because as we said, a web is not created with one thread. A puppet is not dangled with one string. There's many goes on here. And become students of this, not pessimistically, but think of this as your enlightenment.
Yeah.
This is enlightening you. It's lightening you above the rest of it so that you can start to see what is going on.
Yeah.
To get that perspective.
Not getting down by the information itself. This is an opportunity. You know, first you have to, I don't know if we want to, you know, call it a problem, because, you know, again, then we go back to the all of that aspect. But you know, first you have to recognize and see what is the problem for, you know, for you to be able to do something about it, you know, in a way. So this is an opportunity, you know.
And look at how man has manufactured these problems.
You know?
And as I say, it all boils down to his contract with himself from the earliest days to, you know, lose his psychic sovereignty and his selfhood. The ego is all about that. And it learned that out of its weakness. Out of its great fragility, it started to need this sort of scaffolding, you know. And therefore it fell victim to the black art. It really did. And so every voice, every phenomena that comes in to, you know, stop this action of life, this allowance, I consider is a sorcery. Negative. And people can read more about this on the Weapons of Mass Deception Found article that I wrote. It's on the forum, you know, where they can email me for it. There's a lot of explanations on there about that, the divination and the goddess DVD, because, you know, being and doing is another division we didn't talk about. There's another component to this about the being and the doing and the difference between those two. We talked about it a little bit, but, you know, again, life and lifestyle. What today we have is lifestyle, not life. Very few people are living, but they're certainly in the lifestyle because they bought that whole prefabricated, you know, packaged imagery that the world has been throwing. And realize that, you know, things like good and evil, they are built into the universe. You know, they're in the architecture of the universe. You can't do anything about good and evil, but you can do something about your attitude towards those realities. You're in control of that.
That's right. So I mean, I think that is an excellent point to round things up on here. Is there anything else you want to, you know, get through to this? We've, you know, again, we've been talking about the differences here between sorcery and magic, and what you can, you know, do about it to get into the magical concepts more, and also as a help to all the, you know, all the problems and all the mess we see out there in the world, you know, and that it's something that comes from within yourself, the development of yourself, and even how you view the problem and so forth. But what would you recommend one of your DVDs to, you know, dive into more of this, Divination and the Goddess?
Yeah, Divination and the Goddess, because in that one I talk about this very serious problem between karma and dharma, being and doing, and specifically this illusion of Maya is something outside yourself. Maya is illusion, but it's your ideas about things that is of the illusionary quality here. And the priests, you see, turned this around. They were very cunning. If they could make Maya the world, and if they could make Maya matter, well, then they can sell you this idea that your spirit is caught in matter. And now you need us to help you to get out of it. So a priest class is born. And of course, with Maya goes the female, and goes the feminine, you see, and goes the animals. And the whole circus starts up by a misinterpretation that It's your perceptions about reality that is the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this whole priestarchy started to operate over there, not to liberate man, but to further enslave them.
Mm-hmm.
In turning them off from the real meaning of the word. So we'll go into that in the Divination and the Goddess DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Go into this thing about technology, about what is technology, why did man even get into science and mm-hmm. technology, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And also to realize that it's not so much that magic is the operation of mind over matter, which is totally, you know, I mean, it does happen, as we said, that action does happen. They scientifically proved it.
Yeah.
But magic is really more the understanding of how the universe is changing you.
Hmm.
See, one that's from an egoistic point of view of how I affect change in the world. Hmm. Man, it's almost like the child mind is obsessed with this.
Hmm.
How do I wave my magic wand? Meaning, how does my ego, how does my existence affect everything around me?
Hmm.
Why don't people, you know, study how the world affects you.
Mm.
Like, for instance, when you drink a glass of water, you are aware that you've changed that water by your drinking.
Mm.
But are you aware also that that water has changed you forever in that simple act?
Mm.
No, we're not. See, it's one-sided.
Mm.
Now, you know, I've learned this from Rilke, the poet, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
and from Blake and from other Heidegger, Bergson, they're talking about this, you know, about are we really subtly aware of how the things around us affect and change us forever.
Mm.
And how we're constantly a different person every day. It's like that Bruce Lee thing, you know, I reincarnate myself every day.
Mm.
His mind is fresh and new. He's the blank slate. You know, so are we really going through this living life process of being aware? Remember you read it in the early part where is magic that which affects us on all levels at once?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, okay, if magic is that which affects us on all levels at once, meaning what? Emotionally, sensationally, intellectually, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so on,
mm-hmm.
and physically. Then how many things constitute magic in your life then?
Mm-hmm.
There must be very few things, isn't it,
mm-hmm.
for most people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, okay, we can say it's obvious artwork, beautiful artwork.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look at Vermeer or Bruegel, you know, because these were men who were enraptured with those other inanimate, you mm-hmm. see, friends.
Mm-hmm.
They had that family that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so their paintings were to share that voice with you. So we can say that art is an expression of that,
mm.
that affects us on all levels at once. Music, I mean, certainly. That's why people love music.
Mm.
It's because it's affecting them, not just emotionally or intellectually, but on all levels at once.
Mm.
Good music will do that.
And just, you know, think of the artist themselves, because they spend a lot of time actually trying to see what they're, as in order to be able to paint the way they do, because in most cases they do paint, you know, environments or objects in a way, but they spend a lot of time learning on what it actually is and
yeah,
studying it a lot of
right.
time. And in that process, I think mm-hmm. that becomes a spiritual process.
Isn't it magic
yeah.
to know how to mix colors?
Yeah.
In fact, do you know that during the time of the guilds and the time of the artisans, mixing colors was so sacred that only certain people could do it? Today in Tibet, it's still considered one of the greatest art. You know the sand paintings that they do? Those
mm-hmm.
mandalas that they draw
yeah,
and then they
sand.
Destroy afterwards?
Yeah. yeah.
The whole science of color, the whole science of mixing colors,
mm-hmm.
the mystery of the color gray, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You get into a 2-hour program just about gray, the color gray, and mm-hmm. how significant that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can go into the whole thing about the Kabbalah with this, you know,
yeah.
color, whole thing, the whole
yeah.
thing with color. But the mixing of color, the ritual of letting the colors teach you,
mm-hmm.
do you have a relationship with color? Nobody has a relationship with color. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, on and on and on. Once mm. you start becoming awakened into the whole, what the inanimate world can teach you, architecture.
Mm.
You know, for me, just looking at the architecture, the buildings,
mm.
is an incredible enlightening experience.
Yeah.
You know, and how light plays on certain kinds of buildings and the whole inanimate thing. I've always been into that. The beauty of a guitar or a piano.
Mm.
The beauty of a wood, you know, on a beautiful table, you know.
Mm.
And of course, this can involve the creations of men, obviously.
Mm. Yeah.
Because, of course, the men who've created things based on their discovery and their learning from nature is
mm-hmm.
perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Mm. But a man who's a demented, tortured, you know, mentally amputated, mutilated shard trying to build stuff in his antithesis, in his antipathy to nature, that's
mm.
obscene. And
mm.
that's what we're getting more and more of in our world,
mm.
is nature being pushed back, you know, from our dialogue.
Mm.
And this manufacture of this hideous, monstrous, anti-human type of world.
Mm.
We have to really come back into it, and I really believe that that's why a lot of the gods were portrayed in ancient times with animal form.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons.
Mm.
It's because of what the animals can teach us, and what the so-called inanimate that we've been trained to believe is below us or lower than us.
Mm.
See, I don't believe that the dolphins and the whales are lower forms than us. I believe they're higher forms of life, actually.
Mm.
I absolutely believe that.
Mm.
I absolutely believe that wolves, you know, and I mean, people can laugh their heads off if they feel like it, but, you know, There was a reason why the Nagas, the ancient gods, were portrayed as serpents. Mm. You see, I got questions about this, and I've been looking into some of this stuff, and why certain animals were sacred. You know, you had an interview with Andrew Collins in which he was talking at length about the vulture, you know, and how important that was. Later, that morphed into the dove,
the cygnus,
you know, and the swan. Yeah. You see, obviously Christianized a little bit, but the utter significance that some of these animals had. The horse, look how significant the horse was to the Scythians and the Celts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys had the horses in their houses. Look at the you know, the Lord of the Rings, the story of the Rohan, the people of the riders of Rohan,
yeah,
right, and the relationships with their horse, connecting to Epona and the goddess, you know, of the horse, and that the horse was not some blinking beast of burden to these people.
Yeah.
It was their gods, sacred, man. This was sacred.
Yeah.
What the hell, you know? The rat, you know, they have these beautiful temples to the rat over in India.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. You know, I'm not going to go and worship some god in some temple, but open a temple to the rat, and I'm all for it. You know, and they literally do that. They have these rat temples where they feed the rats, and that, to me, that's absolutely what I'm talking about.
Nice.
The day of the rat will come, you know.
Very nice. Yeah, Michael, so round things up here. You know, we have might have new listeners with us and people who don't know about your DVD series and so forth. Give us out the website for that and what you would recommend, again, in connection to this interview and so forth.
Well, the DVDs are on Origins and Oracles, because they're all one series. Six DVDs, box sets, you know, and you can look at all of that, including the Atlantis book, on originsandoracles.com. And if they go to michaeltessarian.com, that will get them to all the different websites I've got. I've got six or seven websites. And certainly everyone's welcome to come on the new forum, which is the MSAR forum, M-T-S-A-R forum. It's at redicecreations.com /MSAR forum.
Yeah.
And come on there and leave their comments.
Mm.
And also, the forum is for putting up posts. See, a lot of what I do is collaborative.
Mm.
I rely on people to send me, you know, clips, editorials, amazing things that they discover.
Mm.
And then the forum is where we post all of this stuff so people can see that, you know, it embellishes what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because people are discovering a lot of things around the world. This is a time of awakening.
Yeah.
You know, the planet Pluto and the planet Uranus are operating to bring in a new spirit of rebellion, which is extremely important, and it's connected to the Holy Spirit, you know, the coming of the true Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And so there's a real awakening happening all around the world, and every day we're sent material saying, hey, you know, we found this in our local neighborhood, or this is going on, or look at the symbolism that I discovered.
Mm.
So I want people to really come by as much as they can to the forum and send us stuff, you know, and let's help open the eyes of the world.
Yeah. Definitely.
So the forum again is at redicecreations.com/MSAR forum.
Yeah, and I linked up just previously here the web streams, all the web streams that Michael have up there. Tons of free stuff to look through. And then, you know, when you're ready, head on over to originsandoracles.com and support Michael and get one of those DVDs, because that's excellent information on there. So, again, Michael, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for spending your time with us here. We
thank
so
you.
Much appreciate
that's
it.
That's a pleasure.